Welcome to Two Bards, One Mic. Insert interesting music here.
I swear we're actually going to get music one of these days.
Nah.
213.
213. Or a dyslexic 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, like really dyslexic.
Yeah.
So we've been absent for a bit.
We have been.
Yeah.
And our deepest apologies.
Yeah, it's a busy, really busy time. Additionally, there have been some sicknesses, some travel, a bunch of other stuff. But we're here.
We are here. We're happy to be here finally again.
Condolences to our listeners.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're back.
Yeah. We apologize.
Yes. In the interim, since we've been away, you've done something really cool. Why don't you talk about that a little bit? Something that
Can you remind me? Because I can't remember what we talked about on the last... transpired.
I think you talked about potentially having this thing to do, but you've actually performed it now.
Oh, the staged reading.
Correct.
Okay. Yes. So last week, on Thursday, was a one-night-only performance of a staged reading of a play called Building the Wall. And hopefully, I'm going to jump forward a little bit. There were some people there that may have us remount this again at the University of Puget Sound.
Ooh.
On a slightly bigger scale. Whether it's one night or a couple nights, I'm not sure. But it's a story about a post-Trump era. It's two people. There's a historian come to interview a gentleman in an orange jumpsuit. I played the gentleman in the orange jumpsuit.
Okay.
And it's kind of the... tells the story of a slippery slope of an everyday Joe who through... a set of unfortunate events happens to devolve into, well, I guess I can let it go, basically Auschwitz on American soil.
And God, I wish it wasn't as relevant as it was.
Yes, it's very relevant, and if you look at my Facebook page, some people had some very generous words to say about it. I was a little worried. We had four total rehearsals. The rest of the work I did on my own time, and pulled off a really stupendous show. We had about 100 people, which is more than they usually get for a staged reading. And we got done, and Randy said, when I saw this in Seattle, it was dead silence for a while. So just be ready for that. We're just going to drop the lights and we're going to leave them off until applause starts. And no one was prepared for the immediate response.
Yeah.
And the lights came up and the whole place stood up.
Wow. That's amazing, and, dude.
Yeah. So it was very gratifying on a number of levels. It's work that I like to do that I don't usually get a chance to do, and playing someone so far outside of who I am and being able to make him a relatable character. And it was great. Tom Brophy came and saw the last dress rehearsal that we had because he was flying out to Jersey on Thursday, so he couldn't see the real thing. But talking to him on the way home and then talking to some other people afterwards, it was gratifying to me that they all took something different away from it. And so I did my job in playing it. I played a character, but I played it neutral to allow the audience to make assumptions.
Right.
And it was funny because people that saw the same show made very different
assumptions. Yeah.
And there's nothing more gratifying than that.
Right.
I think the last time that happened was when I went and did Doubt.
Right.
And I purposefully did not choose whether I was guilty of what I was accused of or not until a particular monologue happened.
Right.
And I could judge how the audience was reacting to that monologue. And I'm like, okay, now everyone's going to think I'm this, or maybe they think I'm that.
Right.
And so that was really interesting. But I'm very hopeful that we get to do it again. I'm hopeful that people who came to see this one will see that. Other people who weren't able to will see this other one. But yeah, it was finally some really good stage time. Even though it was a staged reading, people were like, I didn't even notice you were reading.
That's awesome, dude.
That's great.
That is great. That is great. So I had a story ready for the very next day after we did it. And then, of course, we weren't able to do the podcast.
Right.
So this is how far behind we are. The day before we were supposed to do the last podcast, we went to, I guess it was Federal Way, to pick up a phone.
Yes.
And I was going to...
Oh my God, it's been that long.
It's been that long. So I was going to tell everybody kind of what that story was.
Yes, please.
Let me get to it then. Now, keep in mind, I've had a lot of time to cool down. Because it's been weeks.
Yeah.
I've also had time to use the phone, so I have opinions.
Oh, good.
But let's go ahead and start with what happened.
Yeah.
So I ordered a Google Pixel 2 XL, Pixel XL 2. My old Pixel had 32 gigs, which is just not enough space. I take a lot of photographs. I mean, that's really my biggest thing. My phone is my primary camera. So I take a ton of photographs. Having only 32 gigs was becoming a problem. They did a deal where they were allowing you to basically finance the phone for 24 months. And I was going to double payments on that, but finance it for 24 months. I could swing that. So I unlocked my credit. I have my credit locked. So I went to TransUnion, which is, I think, who they used. Unlocked my credit, ran the credit. Of course, it got approved and started the whole process. Google Fi, when you order anything off of Google Fi, it's a one-click thing. I don't know if there are settings for that. I've never looked because I've never had a problem. But you click order and you're done. Okay.
Nice.
Get an email that confirms your order, but it's an email that confirms an order. So that gets filed right into the I don't give a fuck category. So I went through and I clicked, and somehow, some way, Google added a one to my address. I've never entered this particular address with it one higher. Never. The weird thing was when I went to actually check on this later, there were like 30 entries for the same address in Google. Like 30. The one that was marked as use as default was totally accurate. 100% accurate. Even had the last four digits of the zip on it, right? Super accurate. It just randomly picked this one that was one off. Out of 20 that were, 19 of them were correct, one was off. I don't understand it. Anyway, so it picked that. It shipped to the wrong address. FedEx wouldn't deliver. They refused. There is... The address that they had doesn't exist. If you look across the street, which is where this would be, there are two houses. Neither of them is that number. Okay? So this address doesn't exist. So I don't know what the fuck happened. But FedEx wouldn't do it. They were like, you have to call Ingram Micro, who does the shipping for Google. I'm sure they use a few people, probably like CDW and stuff like that too. But this particular package was shipped from Ingram Micro. You have to call them and have them do it. Well, I can't call Ingram Micro. I'm not Google. So I call Google. I go through all the escalation procedures at Google Fi, and holy shit, nobody can help me. So finally, someone's like, I will escalate this to my manager. I'm like, great. I will escalate this to my manager. We'll give you a call back. About 2 hours later, I get an email. Your order has been canceled. My order that I spent $12 to unlock my credit to be able to order. Mm-hmm. What? What do you mean my order has been canceled? They don't return a message. I've hit them up on Twitter. They don't return a message. Like, they have not returned anything. Hmm. Still, to this date, they have not gotten back to me on this problem. They promised me a callback. They haven't gotten back to me. But I don't really care, and I'll tell you why. So we called FedEx, and I was like, I want my damn phone. And they're like, we can't help you with that. You're not in your micro. And I was like, escalate me. Well, first Aaron did it.
Mm-hmm.
And she got escalated. And they said, yes, we'll fix it. And then they didn't fix it. So then I called, and I got escalated. And I said, because they were going to fix the address. And I said, instead of fixing the address, hold it, and I will come get it. And they're like, okay. So the regional escalation manager put a shipper hold on it. Scott, because he's awesome, picked me up from work, and we drove 900 hours, I think, because it was rush hour.
Shitty traffic. Yeah,
to Federal Way from downtown Seattle, and we got the damn phone.
We did. Well,
it wasn't there at first.
It was like, well, the truck should be here at 5, but we don't know where it is.
It can be as late as so they close at 8:30, and they're like, it can be as late as closing, and we're like, well, fuck. So we're like, let's go get some food. So we went to Safeway to get some food. We're driving back. I get the text.
Right. Now, let's just explain one thing. We're there at 5:15, so we could potentially be stuck in Milton.
Yes.
Which is a huge hub outside of Fife.
Yeah.
Yeah, huge is a sarcastic word.
Traffic-wise, you're not wrong.
Right. So, yeah, we went to the Safeway. We got some beverages. We got some snacks. We said, okay, this is going to be a while. And driving back to just park at the FedEx.
Considered a movie for half a second.
Yeah.
Like, that's where we were at. We were considering a movie. We drive back. Right before we get there, I get the call. It wasn't a text. He actually called me. That's right. And I get the call. And it's like, hey, your package is here. I'm like, perfect timing. We go. We pick it up. The box is beat to shit. The shipping box is beat to shit. So I'm like, fuck, dude. I hope my phone's okay. My phone. Yeah. That was canceled. So, open it up. Gorgeous. Everything. This phone is beautiful. I'm not going to fucking beat around the bush here. This phone is amazing. So it has enough juice. I will go ahead and I start it. It's like, hey, do you have another phone that you want to transfer to this one? I was like, I don't normally like doing that, but you know what? Let's do it. Because it came with a USB-C to USB-C cable, which most phones don't. They come with a USB-C to standard USB. So it was kind of interesting to see a USB-C to USB-C. I'm like, all right, plug it into my old phone. Dude, it pulled over everything I needed. Everything. It was fantastic. The only thing it didn't do was log you into your accounts. Logged you into Google, didn't log you into your accounts. So, and it didn't reset up fingerprint. I had to reset up fingerprint.
And WhatsApp.
Well, right, because that's a login. So WhatsApp weird thing. WhatsApp uses a QR code that it scans from your... basically, when you choose to log in somewhere else... So the WhatsApp thing is bizarre. It links to your phone number, okay? So if you change your phone number, if you do anything else, it fucking, like, freaks out, and you have to re-register it and everything like that. And I forgot to back up my WhatsApp messages, and it does not back them up by default.
Mm-hmm.
When you are on a WhatsApp client, your messages are always stored in temporary storage on your primary phone. So remember this. Unless you choose to back them up, they are on your phone in a temporary manner. In that they're safe as long as the app doesn't get uninstalled, but the second you uninstall or change the app, they are gone.
Yep.
So go into settings, choose backup. It's secure, don't get me wrong, and you know, rivals out there probably going, yeah, of course it is. That's the way it should be. WhatsApp is owned by Facebook, so I'm a little iffy on all this, but I still think it feels secure. I don't know.
Yeah. It's encrypted on both ends.
It's encrypted on both ends. Yeah. So that's, I mean, they probably have your data. It would just take them a couple of minutes to get to it. If it's 512, it might take them a couple of years to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they probably also have your key. They probably have your shared key, your shared secret. But they don't have your private key. Like, they shouldn't. They shouldn't have your private key.
Right.
Google does. Google's got your fucking private key. So Google and Facebook could get together and unlock all your dick pics.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck for them. So, it's 2K. It's a 2K dick pic. That's terrifying. It's so small. I'm setting up the phone while we're, you know, Scott's sitting in traffic, and it's not as bad because we took a like super secret Batman ninja route home. By all rights, we should have been there for an extra hour. That's how much traffic there was. But Scott was like, fuck it. We're doing the surface street. We're going to go this roundabout way, blah, 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 blah. And boom, we're back on the freeway heading north at quite a clip, doing great. So got the phone. They never called me. They never charged me neither. So fair enough.
There you go.
There you go. Your support sucks unless this is like how you do this thing, in which case thank you, but I will never know that it wasn't just a mistake. And your phone is awesome. I will say that the Pixel 2, holy shit. So I avoided getting it at launch because of all the problems with the screen people were having.
Mm-hmm.
Not a problem anymore.
Good.
They've done something, I'm assuming probably sub-pixel dimming or something like that, to keep it from having static image burn-in. It is a fantastically beautiful display with a weird caveat, which I'll get to. The camera, even though it's only 12 megapixel, is an absolute step up from the Pixel 1. And the Pixel 1 had a pretty good camera.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is rivaling my 1020, and the 950 was fucking way up there too.
Yep.
The 950 wasn't as good as the 1020, but it also could take more than one picture every 40 seconds. So acceptable. The 950 down to 20 some odd megapixels. Okay. Darn 20, but very good photos. The original Pixel, I want to say, was 12. New Pixel's 12, but all of the hardware in the new Pixel is better. The photo sites are larger. It shows. It is fantastic at capturing images. So, loving the camera. Here's one of the weird things. The screen has a rounded bezel on the corners, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't sound like much of anything. It's like, okay, rounded bezel, no big deal. But the actual number of pixels exceeds the number of visible pixels. And I'm not about you have to see every fucking pixel, whatever, blah, 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 but you're just cutting off corners for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Why? They're there. I know that that display didn't come rounded. That display is... So you basically put a black bezel over it. So I've got, like, overscan issues now, like I'm on a CRT TV. What the fuck? That's, like, one of two complaints I have, though.
Mm-hmm.
Complaint number two would probably be that the glass is also curved at the edges.
Mm.
So none of the screen protectors on Amazon work. I had to buy one and send one back with an angry letter because it had 4.8 stars on the review. And I'm like, cool. And it was like 60 some odd reviews. I'm like, mm-hmm. That's fucking awesome. So I ordered it and I get it and it doesn't work at all. Like, it isn't even close to working. The edges just fly right off the edge. It's fucking tempered glass and they didn't curve the glass. It's flat glass. So it's not working. I go back on and I start looking. All of those reviews are in terribly broken English. None of them are verified buyers.
Mm-hmm.
All of the newest reviews, like the last 20 some odd reviews, are all one star. This is garbage. This is utter crap. So... but I happened to go in before those had kicked in.
Yes.
So, yeah, I guess I should have, like, gone through and actually picked through the negative reviews instead of just being like, oh, highest rated, cool, let's go with it. Oh, well. So, had to send that back. right now I'm running with just a case, no screen protector, feeling a little weird about that. I might go down to like South Center and get one of the liquid ones put on.
Mm-hmm.
Those are pretty nice. So, but overall, you can squeeze it to activate Google Assistant.
So, oh, nice.
So you don't have to say, okay, Google, and, mm-hmm. and set off everyone else in the world's phone. You can just squeeze it, which is also really helpful if your intent is to immediately just start talking to the assistant. I hate doing the, okay, Google, wait for the beep beep, you know, and all that stuff.
Right.
This you just squeeze, it goes bong, you talk.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty nice. Bluetooth is next level. Its connectivity is fantastic.
Is it 4.1?
I think so. It might even mm-hmm. be, I don't know if there's later.
Maybe. I don't know either.
Anyway, it's amazingly high fidelity audio.
Mm-hmm.
Stays connected to everything. You don't have to disconnect your devices to get them to pair again. As long as it's ever had them connected, it keeps it and auto pairs with them.
Nice.
So I did get a pair of Google Buds. I figured, hey, well, I didn't pay for the phone. I might as well, you know, pay for some Google Buds. They're amazing. Didn't understand them at first because they use a loop to hold themselves in your ear. I've never used earbuds that use a loop to hold themselves into your ear.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't fit. And I was like, these fucking suck. They don't fit at all. It's fucking rounded screen. No, I mean, wait. Plastic earbuds. They don't fit in your... Finally went through the actual paperwork that I've never had to go through for headphones before. I find the bit that's like, here's how you fit it in your ear. And you use the loop of cable to hook it into this part that I'm pointing to the... what is that called? The
coaxula?
That sounds like where a duck's butt is. Yeah. But yeah, the Coachella. No. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The
cochlear.
Well, that's inside.
That's inside.
Yeah. But the part of your ear that looks like a seashell.
Cochlear.
Sure. Cochlea exclusive or cochlea and. But yeah, your ear pit, it goes into that. And they're super comfortable once you figure that out. Like,
mm-hmm.
because all of the pressure is on a part of your ear that can deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being on a part of your ear that gets sore over time. So they're actually like really comfortable to wear for long periods. They last a really long time. I haven't gotten to use the Translate yet, but it's a neat feature. It's like a Babelfish.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of neat. So yeah, overall, hardware, OS, everything, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Everything around the experience was utter dog shit, though. I know. Like, I have a roof over my head and nobody's bombing me currently. But still, you know, I have my normal, and this was definitely right. Well below the normal. So it felt shitty. And then not getting called back for a company that you're giving a grand to, or you thought you were giving a grand to,
mm-hmm.
was a pretty annoying thing.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so that's all done now and, it works great. I can say that, on sale, I recommend the phone.
Mm-hmm.
At full price, I can't recommend the phone. There are too many other... this was going to be on sale by like $200.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really... Given what else is out there in the market, the OnePlus 6 just...
Yeah.
You know, I can't...
That thing is...
I can't recommend buying the phone at full price.
Yeah.
But I can recommend buying it if it's in your price range or if you have to have... Google branded, some people get it through their work or whatever. Like, if it's an option at your work, fuck yes, absolutely. Fantastic phone, fantastic screen, great quality. The Bluetooth quality is beyond what I expected.
Mm-hmm.
Bluetooth has been something that I've never really bought into because the quality has always sucked. This shit is primo. It's good shit.
Sorry for the coughing, recovering from illness.
Yeah.
So I got two things that I want to talk about phone related
mm-hmm.
On my end since I've had enough time to play around with mine.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend the OnePlus phones now. Having gotten used to Android, the camera on this is... astounding. I still haven't posted pics, so maybe I'll do that at some point this week. I showed them to Andy when we got his phone, and he was waiting for things to upload we went to Heronswood Nursery, and I got some really amazing pictures in the style that I like to do. My one, and I don't know if it's the phone, I don't know if it's Alpine, and I don't know if it's Pandora, but one of the things that I got with the stereo replacement in my car was one that would hook up to Pandora. Now, an iPhone, I don't know why. I think I do know why now, but on iPhone, you can plug straight into the USB and boom, Pandora works. For Android, you have to go in via Bluetooth and it will recognize it. I can go to the Bluetooth input and always get Pandora when it's playing on the phone. But I bought this particular head unit because it had a Pandora aspect to it. So that when it's doing Pandora, it shows, you know, Pandora Audio Alpine, and it's just a black screen on my phone, and then I can thumb up songs as they're going through, I can see the titles, I can do all this stuff. I can do everything but the thumb up, thumb down in the Bluetooth, but it's just so much nicer when it just, you turn, when it works, it works. I get in the car, I turn on the car, it says no Pandora, ding, 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 connecting, boom. It's great. So I've got some phone calls into people to figure out where the downturn is. And it was working for about half a month really super well. And I was like, oh, great, it's all figured out. And then it crapped out again. So I don't know if it's Pandora's app or what it is. But that is probably my biggest pet peeve on the phone. It's still snappy, it's still quick. I have put so many apps on this thing and so many games on this thing that are just mindless wastes of nothing I can recommend, but they keep me occupied. But on the headset,
Stranger Things still,
I've completed that.
Yeah, but you can still recommend it.
I can recommend Stranger Things, and Stranger Things is also a game on the Fire Stick as an app. So if you have a Amazon Fire Stick, which I recently got, which I recently cannot rave enough about, and if you can get the Fire Box that is now Alexa and a whole unit and 4K and the whole nine yards, get that fucking thing. $89
And you can play Skyrim on it.
I mean, it is
fucking A.
It is, that is some amazing stuff that they're coming out with. But for the headphones, I've been using Bluetooth for a while, and yeah, sometimes they get a little wonky. You're out walking or you're exercising and the phone's not quite in the right place, it'll dump off. But I recently joined Mast, well, not recently, I guess towards the tail end of the UK, I joined Mastdrop, which is sort of a collective buying. If enough people come in, the price goes down. And sometimes you can get some good deals. And they have, on occasion, what they call a blue box, which is everyone's going to get this. And if enough people sign up, then we start adding in these extras and you have percentages of getting them. So I got a wired set of IEMs or in-ear monitors. They're kind of a hybrid between just a regular headphone and that. There's a large piece of plastic that goes into, sets outside of your ear, and then a standard earbud type goes into the channel there. But it really blocks a lot of the ambient sound. And then it has a wire that comes up that has a sleeve that goes, so it doesn't hang down. It hangs out forward. You tuck it behind your ear, pull it down a little bit, and then it forms to your head. And so now there's zero pressure of anything anywhere. And I've hooked those into the Xbox controller and played at night, and I can hear everything, and I don't have to disturb anyone, and that's great. But I got bumped up to one of the two that I got was a Bluetooth, and I think I spent $10 to get into it, thinking that I get two cool headphones. And one of them turned out to be Bluetooth. Now, the battery is only good for about 4 hours, so it's shit. But I can put those on and listen to my Surface at night, not bother Jen. So, like you said, super comfortable. I can lay with my hand you know, mm-hmm. on the pillow and my head on the hand, and it's not jabbing it into my ear.
Mm-hmm.
Super comfortable. And by and large, the connectivity is pretty good. Sometimes it's a little laggy. It'll say, you know, connected to voice to the Surface, and I turn it on, and then the sound comes out of the Surface, and I hit pause, go into settings, and then mm-hmm. it says, oh yes, okay, and now we're serving music. So, okay, now I can listen to them.
Right.
But those are, between what Andy's talking about, OnePlus just came out with the same thing for about half the price. So for $70, you can get some really banging headphones
mm-hmm.
or earbud Bluetooth headphones that are 4.1 and everything. But also look at the IME type.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can get the really expensive ones that the cord disconnects from and you kind of mold them to your
right.
ear. And, you know, that's $200. I don't have that.
Well, that's $200 entry level. Those things go up to like $2,000
yeah.
for professional musicians. I mean,
yeah.
fucking A, dude.
But these new ones that they have, just kind of mass market IEMs, mm-hmm. are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And no ear fatigue. I mean, that's the one thing that I hate, is you get them in your ear and after a while it's just, doesn't matter how soft the bud is. It just,
Or that itch. I hate that. Like the channel itch. Ugh. Cool. So we will be, did the second episode of Little Bard's Tavern get posted yet?
Not yet.
Not.
Because I thought we were going to have another dark time. I knew that we were recording this time.
Right.
So I thought I'd save it for the next dark time.
Okay. Because, well, yeah, we might have. We're recording another one tomorrow, probably. So Mike,
Little Bard?
Yeah. Michael Great. And I will be recording one tomorrow, specifically about Dark Souls Remastered, Yooka-Laylee, and a number of other things we've seen at E3. Because E3 is going on right now,
mm-hmm.
Some of our expectations and things like that. So we will probably definitely have more coming out. But
awesome.
But and then I'm going to help him kind of set up his microphone and hopefully get a so the quality should be going up as we move forward. We will, Little Bard, regardless of whether or not he's here, will always be recorded on his microphone so that the quality, doesn't jump around.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll bring his Yeti, or he's brought his Yeti, and we'll get that figured out.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah. So because I'm actually working, we should probably get to some of our questions that are way, way late.
Right. But before we do that, really quick, we've got AirD&D, the game on the 17th, mm-hmm. which will be this Sunday.
Correct.
And we may do some sort of audio capture there with everybody, maybe.
Yeah, I figured we'd do that, because we'll have Brian Bender there, we'll have Gordon Duke, and we'll have James Peters, which would be awesome to have everybody kind of chat a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So
we'll grab that, and then is there any other time in the foreseeable future?
So I'll be traveling again to return the kids on the weekend of the 24th, but we could probably record on the 25th, because I'll be back.
Okay, that, or we just throw up a Little Bard, give you some time, and then we record on the 1st of July.
Right.
So let's do that. We've got the AirD&D, and then we'll have another, at least one, if not two,
mm-hmm.
Little Bards, and then we'll be back on the 1st.
Yeah.
So.
And then we do have some cons coming up. We are going to be doing SpoCon, it sounds like, in August.
Okay.
Early August, and then in September we have Snake River FandomCon.
FandomCon.
Yeah, Snake River FandomCon. Which
Comic-Con is suing everyone.
Yes. I'm really excited about Snake River.
I am too.
FandomCon.
That's going to be a hoot.
Yeah. All right. So, without further ado, our question last week was, what is the music that changed your life? That's a simplified version of that.
Mm-hmm.
So James Peter says, Season Speech by Elvin King. What do you want me to do?
There's a thing on the right that's blocking half of the...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Season Speech by Elvin King. Though a bit messy, it remains my favorite song by them to this day. My sister brought it home on a mixed CD, and I remember being dumbstruck for the first time I heard it. It opened with a violin, which my 12-year-old self knew was only for classical music. Then it became rock, metal, as I later learned. Then it went back to medieval instrumentation. Then more metal. This sounds familiar. It was mind-blowing to hear these two concepts together, and I listened to it over and over and over. I played it constantly on repeat for my first ever trip to Yosemite, and the combination of the nature-oriented lyrics and the natural splendor of Yosemite cemented the song as my all-time favorite. To this day, whenever I hear it, I'm reminded of the trees and the meadows of the national park.
Nice.
Yeah.
Casey Lee says, Primus. I did not know that a band could be so creative as to paint with sound until Les Claypool took out his electric paintbrush and inspired me to become a musician.
Heading on up to South Park, going to have myself a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sailing the Seas of Cheese is one of my first ever CD purchases.
Ah.
So, yeah. Rival Guy says, when I was in high school, I played cello and listened to Metallica. So I know where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Apocalyptica's first album came out as I was trying to work out how to play Metallica on the cello myself, saving me a huge amount of effort because someone had already done it. Mm-hmm. So why do it again? A few albums later, as they put out more original music, I got put on the path to symphonic metal. In particular, Hope showed me the potential of the genre. As of whenever this podcast comes out, late, there's no band I've seen live more often. Nice.
Excellent. Rob McLennan says, Kraftwerk's Computer World on headphones. It's like sonic holography. It made me start reaching out for a broad range of musical styles.
Mm, nice. Holophoner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kraftwerk. This is Kraftwerk.
Not holography. Holography.
Holography.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know which one I said, but...
You said holography.
Okay.
Yeah. A holography. I think we're going to skip asking a question this week because there is one up above... So we can let that be our Bardic question of the week, just in case anything goes wrong, because we probably won't have time to answer questions next week.
Right.
So, or to yeah, so. But there is a question coming up, so we will explain that in a second. So now we'll get to the Q&A. This is from even longer ago, because this was a carryover question.
Yes.
Casey Lee asks, does anyone else sing I'm Just a Little Black Rain Cloud when playing a thief to let the DM know you're using hide in the shadows? Or do you have any non-game speak ways of announcing an action to avoid breaking immersion to be more clear about my question's point? I think singing a Winnie the Pooh song kind of breaks immersion personally, but I mean, every time I go steal something, like you steal a cookie, you steal, you know, I'm just a little black rain cloud. Yes, it has to happen. I mean, so.
I don't have anything like that. I just kind of, if I'm being sneaky, I just do it sneakily in the performance.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really interesting. When I start playing more games, or maybe I'll have to figure out what Dennis has in mind and have a few in my back pocket.
Have you read your character sheet?
Another one bites the dust. I'm dead.
Yeah.
I have not read my character sheet yet. Didn't know that.
Well, I'll make sure. I thought he got sent to you, but I'll send it to you. I've read mine.
It probably did get sent to me, and the upheaval going on.
Understood.
Casey Lee says, at Bard Kateers, this is more of an ask the listener, if I may.
This is for you, folks.
Is this the Bardic question?
Yes, this is now our...
So this will now be...
surrogate Bardic question of the week.
And it's a little bit long form, but the basic premise is, if you made a film, fellow listeners, what roles would you cast Scott and Andy in? I ponder this often and have concluded I would make a Dragonlance film and cast Scott as the mighty Flint Fireforge and voice of Verminard's Red Dragon. Cast Andy as Fizbin the Fabulous and voice for Tasselhoff. Tasks would be CGI. I think the bards would nail those roles in epic fashion. Also, I would like to know what the bards think of our ideas. The Bards are filmmakers, and you have many filmmaker friends and fans, so I can't be the only one that has asked himself what role they would cast you in if allowed to make a dream project. So, to the Bardketeers, I ask this, and to the Bards, I ask how you feel about our choices.
Well, we'll hold off on answering even your choices until next week.
Yes.
But I really like this question. It's a lot of fun.
It is. It's a great question.
And I really want Brad to answer it, since he actually produces films. Brad.
Brad.
So James Peters asks, what, if any, point-and-shoot camera would the Bards recommend? As far as I know, there aren't any durable waterproof DSLRs. That's not entirely true. So I'm considering getting an Olympus Tough camera or similar that can survive my adventures, but still give me that optical zoom and depth of field a smartphone camera cannot. So point-and-shoot is a toughie, because there's straight-up DSLR, there's mirrorless DSLR, there's point-and-shoot, and then there's like the hybrid between them where they have interchangeable lenses but only a few, or they have multiple lenses. Like, there's that one really weird, this is where I was saying not quite, because there's that one camera that's got like 17 lenses on the back. That's waterproof. It's built waterproof from the ground up, and it's a point and shoot. There's no extra lenses. It just takes 17 photos at once with different lenses. It's bizarre.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That would be awesome.
It looks like a weird,
so you don't have to change. It's just boom.
Yeah, it looks like
and
a
then
giant techno spider in the pictures I've seen.
I want to look up that.
Yeah. So honestly, I have a hard time recommending anything with an attached lens. I really have a hard time recommending it.
For a point and shoot.
Yes. That's what a point and shoot. Usually that's the distinction between a point and shoot and a DSLR, or even a mirrorless, which is no longer a DSLR, but a mirrorless SLR. Is the can't be single lens reflex. So I guess a mirrorless D. basically the big differentiation is the lens forever built in. So you have to have a multi-purpose, multi-function mechanical lens, or can you swap it? So I really, really like the Sony series of between, you know, if you get between DSLR and point and shoot, the Sony's got some great cameras in that range. I can no longer recommend Canon, just because they've kind of decided they're either going to make, I mean, Rebel's really kind of their low end now.
Yeah.
So their point and shoots, they've kind of given up on. They're really cheap now. And by cheap, I don't mean save you money. By cheap, I mean fall apart when you look at them wrong.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm going to have to go with, Fuji has a couple of nice ones, but for my money, Sony is the place to go.
And depending upon the phone you have, they do have some good waterproof cases for if you're talking about some of the water shoot stuff that you do, or just, you know, it's rainy or I'm going near waterfalls or whatever and you want to protect stuff. But they do have, depending upon the phone, some good waterproof cases that don't obscure the camera.
Right. Now, he's specifically saying he wants something that's not a phone. However, I will bring up that Motorola has a line of phones.
Yes, they do.
That specifically you can go get a Hasselblad snap-on camera. So your phone can still be a fantastic camera with another snap-on device. Those are pretty cool. And it's Hasselblad, though I'm pretty sure it's just the name. They're not actually making the camera for the phone. They're just leasing the name.
Right.
Still, you get optical zoom, you get optical image stabilization, you get that sweet depth of field, and I think it's a 1.4 on that. Most phone cameras are between a 1.8 and a 2.2. So you can get much more depth of field off of the Hasselblad, so yeah. So Patrick Bowden writes, as you briefly mentioned, the Black Book series last episode, which I recommend to any that have not seen it. He's briefly mentioned the Black Book series last episode. Do you have a favorite episode? And if not, who is your favorite stand-up comedian? Bill Bailey and Dylan Moore are some of my favorites. Dylan Moran, I love him specifically. Fell in love with that dude during Shaun of the Dead because he was Davs, he was David, the guy who was like just a piece of shit. He was like Harry Potter if Harry Potter grew up like an actual trust fund kid, but also did nothing with his life. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, that was the guy who owned the store.
In Black Books.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So he is great. I would say my favorite stand-ups are all dead, unfortunately. My favorite stand-ups are kind of the Holy Trinity, which Pryor, Carlin, and for me, this isn't necessarily for everyone, but Bill, where'd my brain go?
Help me. Oh, there. Tool did a thing.
That guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Pancreatic cancer.
Believe, yeah, I can't
Dennis,
believe I don't
Dennis
remember
ripped
his
him
name.
Off. Yeah. I'll remember it the second we stop talking. Mm-hmm. Because it's there's no reason I shouldn't remember this name. It just fell right out of my head.
He's like the Lenny Bruce of that
generation, yeah. So anyway, those are my favorites. I did like a lot of stand-up in the 90s. It did not age well because a lot of it was gimmick-based.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had your Seinfelds or your Judy Tenutas or your fucking Carrot Top and none of that aged well. Gallagher didn't. Some
Even
Gallagher.
Even Eddie Murphy doesn't age particularly well.
No, he does not. He does not. But a lot of the stuff... From some of the older comedians, especially, did age extremely well. Remember, there was a time in the 90s when Andrew Dice Clay was a big pull.
Oh, I had.
I believe you meant to say,
oh, hickory dickory dock. Some woman was sucking.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, indeed.
Yeah, I went and saw him live. I collected paper clippings, I had all the DVDs of his stand ups. Dice was a major, major part of that time. In fact, to a point that before Cameo and I were married in our many tumultuous on-off relationships during college, she left at one point and pulled out all the tape from the VHS tapes, broke all my CDs, shredded my shirt. I had no Dice left, but... yeah, he's one, and for me, the Holy Trinity is Pryor, Carlin, and Williams, because I just love Robin Williams' madness. For English, I love Bill Bailey.
Oh, God,
I love Stephen
yes.
Fry, and one that probably most Americans don't know about is Jimmy Carr.
Oh, yeah.
And
I think most Americans know about Jimmy Carr.
I don't know. Well, I think he has had a Netflix special now, so they
he looks
do,
like
a, but...
he looks like an encephalitic 5-year-old. I love that.
And it's great because he owns up to all the shit that happened in his life earlier and makes jokes about the tax man and all these other things. My favorite one, whenever you see him trying to get someone to talk Liverpudlian, they're like, come on, give me some scouse. Give me some. It's really easy. I want a coat and some chips. and he does this thing, and it's just he can get anyone to sound scouse with that sentence. But it's yeah. So those are my guys.
So I don't consider British like a separate category, but I do consider Bill Bailey and that ilk a separate thing, which is funny because most of the people in it are British. But I also put Zach Galifianakis in there, or Tim Minchin, who's Australian. Scottish guy, Billy Connolly. I kind of put him in there too, because
what about Colin Ferguson?
Yeah.
He had the Late Show, right?
I think so.
No, that's...
Craig Ferguson. Yeah.
Craig Ferguson.
Yeah. 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 And that guy from, The Trip, is that what it's called? Something like The Trip or The Road Trip or The Trip to Italy or something like that. He was also in Tropic Thunder, the director that gets blown up.
Oh, Yeah, I'm drawing a blank on that one,
Stephen,
too.
Anyway. But yeah, all of them are... there's observational comedy. There's direct political comedy. To me, Pryor, Carlin, political... Like, that's a very straightforward comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That's comedy that's delivered to you. The other comedians are comedians that pull you into the world, the absurdity of their world, and you just kind of live with it on the stage for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I do love that. Bill Bailey is quite possibly the smartest human I have ever seen.
Yeah.
He's fucking ridiculous. He's like a goddamn classic, a pro-level classic pianist.
Mm-hmm.
But they all are, right? Galifianakis, Tim Minchin, they all fucking play piano.
Yeah.
Assholes. They're not there handing you comedy.
Right.
They're there handing you the pieces for you to put the joke together in your head, and then you laugh even harder.
Mm-hmm.
Which I do love. I absolutely love that. The thing is, though, you have to be ready for that. You can't come in after like a day that has just destroyed you and sit down and watch that.
Right.
Because you're just not going to have the energy. The right. Yeah. Carlin can make me laugh at any time.
Yeah.
So, especially on Thomas the fucking Tank Engine. God, he went blue.
I also like not necessarily stand-up,
mm-hmm.
but funny people.
Mm-hmm.
Is any of the major contestants on QI,
mm-hmm.
with Stephen Fry, anybody on 8 out of 10 Cats,
mm-hmm.
is... I mean, these people are like... They just come with puns and jokes, and someone says something and someone else can turn it around really quick. And Alan Davies, he's on a lot of those shows, but he also has, if you can find it, Alan Davies as Yet Untitled.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings in four different people. They might be comedians, musicians,
mm-hmm.
People of popular culture. And they just sit around a table with him. And he leads through questions, and you get funny stories about their life and stuff. But the point of the show is, it's called As Yet Untitled, mm-hmm. because they will find the title with something that somebody says.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll keep a list, and he's got someone in his ear, and he's like, oh, yeah. Oh, they're telling me we forgot this one. And then everybody kind of votes, and almost always, one just shoots right to the top, you know. I was in a hot tub and my mother saw my heart on, or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it happens to be. But it's something from these people's stories that happens while you're watching it. And it's incredibly witty and just fun to learn about Eddie Izzard and,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of these things that you don't normally get to know about.
And I do love Eddie Izzard, but Eddie Izzard is interesting to me because he is more a performer than a comedian, in my opinion. Even his comedy is performance. A lot of what he says sounds like rambling. It is all, I mean, to the second planned.
Yep.
His pauses, his stutters, his stumbles, they are all planned, 100%. Mm-hmm. So he fits more to me with George Carlin and that ilk. So even though his comedy is a little more like, you have, and he's the, you know, and he does a lot of that, like flustered,
mm-hmm.
you know, where he's like, you finish the thought, you know. He's also good at bookending, and I do love bookending. To me, that's why Edgar Wright movies are fucking astounding, is because of bookending. But you look at Eddie Izzard, and he'll come out and he'll make a joke at the beginning, and you better believe that joke is going to show up at the end,
mm-hmm.
you know. And a lot of people do that. Amy, what is her last name? Is it Amy Tran? She's done two comedy specials and she did them both pregnant, which is really fucking funny, but she's really funny. Before I found out about all the joke thievery, I really did like, Amy Schumer a lot,
mm-hmm.
but like she steals a lot of jokes from a lot of fellow comedians, it seems. I still find it really funny because mm-hmm. I haven't necessarily seen or heard the jokes before, but yeah. Robin Williams was another person that was problematic in that area. A lot of people have said Robin Williams has never stolen a joke in his life. Robin Williams just makes every joke that can be made. So You know, that's, and again, Robin Williams' serious stand-up is where he wins it for me. It's not his,
yeah,
it's not his necessarily his coke-fueled come out and do, here's a voice, and he does all that. It's not necessarily that. It's the shit where he comes out and he like does the kid's voice and he's like, you know, mm-hmm. Fuck it. That whole thing. The stuff that's really like real. None of that has ever been brought up as being potentially stolen.
Right.
It's the coke-fueled stuff, which literally could be people riffing in the back of a room, and it just like gets written away. You mm-hmm. know, there's a lot of excuses for that. Same with Amy Schumer. A lot of people make jokes. They get written in the back of the room, you know, in the back of your head. It's really hard to have so many comedians out there and not have joke crossover.
Yeah.
But it's when they're close enough that kind of... And I'm not saying Amy Schumer necessarily stole jokes, but some of her jokes are close enough to others to make me not feel great about it. I also like Camille Nanjiani a lot. He's really fucking funny. But again, these are back to just classic stand-up.
Right.
These don't fall into any of the big categories. These are just classic club stand-up. Camille Nanjiani, granted, his thing is kind of like... He comes out and he does the, hey, I'm Pakistani, let's have some fun with that thing. But then he gets into the stuff that's just universal. And that's where he really starts to shine. But he shines because he sets the expectation that this is going to be, oh, I'm Pakistani, that's going to be the joke.
Mm-hmm.
And then just fucking gets rid of it immediately. So I really like that, too. I like that kind of bait and switch.
Who did the original Office?
Ricky Gervais?
Yes. I love his stand-up. His latest Netflix Humanity. One is hilarious.
Yeah.
And then the other one that surprised me, because I liked his old stuff,
mm-hmm.
and he hasn't been standing up for a while, but Kevin James is funny.
Kevin James, to my chagrin, without ever, I don't think he uttered damn.
Nope.
During one of his performances.
He never does. He doesn't swear.
But he had me in tears during the picking out the Hallmark card bit that he used to do. In tears, man. It was so fucking good. The you know, and the capper of that, of course, is he turns it over, looks at the price, and puts it back.
Yeah.
After finding the perfect one. And, I mean, I fucking died.
Have you seen his latest?
Rowan Atkins. No, I haven't.
You need to.
Yeah.
He talks about the allergy people.
Oh, God.
And it's great. It just... I, as does he...
Mm-hmm.
empathizes with those that have allergies.
Mm-hmm.
But dear God, it should not be a title on your name.
Right.
It should not be loudly proclaimed. And that's all that I'm going to say. Go watch that bit because it is, yeah, Rowan is mm-hmm. something special.
Rowan Atkinson is... His when he mimes stuff.
Oh my God.
Like the drums.
Yeah.
He did the drum mining. Holy, drum mining is...
Non-verbal stand-up comedian.
Yes.
Holy shit.
But his verbal stand-up is fucking biting as hell.
Yeah.
Like the St. Peter bit that he used to do. I think it was a St. Peter bit where he's like, you know, he's like, all right, Jews over here, atheists over there, don't you feel stupid? You know, like
mm-hmm.
that whole thing. Tons of fun. And again, probably not just the best part of Love Actually, the only part of Love Actually that 100% no matter what, you can't complain about. No matter what your viewpoints are, the Rowan Atkinson scene, someone is getting punished, and he is the demon doing it. And it's fantastic. Just, it'll only take a moment. You know, it's like mm-hmm. lavender. That whole bit was just fantastic. Europe.
Rob McLennan, what was your biggest moment of realization? Something that just snapped your head around?
I've never really thought of that, to be honest. Probably that stuff is stuff. Stuff is stuff. I had a lot of people hold items over my head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my mom was... a classic fucking manipulator. She would hold my possessions over my head. She was a terrible human being. When I finally realized stuff is just stuff and it can be let go, that sort of changed everything. It changed a lot of how I felt about, it changed how I processed empathy in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
Because stuff is stuff. Changes how you look at things like robbery, or I guess burglary. Robbery is still a problem,
mm-hmm.
because that's not stuff, that's people. That's the difference, right? Robbery, there's two people. Burglary, there's one in a bag. So burglary and stuff like that, it's like, or the car. Like, our car has been beat to shit all the time. And, I'll come on and I'll play it up for fun. It doesn't bother me. I haven't lost sleep at night because our car has been hit or shot with a slingshot or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Stuff is stuff.
Yeah.
So that was my, I loaned a camera to a friend of mine who took it to Boston and it got stolen. And it sucks. I was more upset, far more upset by the way the hotel was treating him, mm-hmm. than I was about losing the camera. It right. sucks to not have a camera. Like, it sucks that that piece of stuff that I use to make other stuff isn't around.
Mm-hmm.
But my initial thought was, why are they treating you like this?
Yeah.
Why are they? Because I knew he felt bad.
Right.
He feels like super responsible for that stuff. So I had to be like, dude, it's stuff. Like, but why are they treating you like this? That's what I want to know. And that was a huge kind of head spin for me.
I think for me, there have been many, I'm sure. But for me, the biggest one was, and it's weird, and a lot of people can argue this, and I understand that 100%. But you need to figure out how to shut off. I don't know if it's the id, the super id, the ego, the super ego, whatever. But that little voice inside of your head that talks about stuff, you can medicate, you can yoga, you can meditate.
Mm-hmm.
Until you figure out, I mean, it's kind of like in acting to a different degree. So mm-hmm. this is easier to talk about. You know, you get up, you get ready to go do the audition, and that little dragon, parrot, whatever you want to call it, it's not the angel demon.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that little voice that's telling you, you know, why are you doing this again? I mean,
you're going to fail.
You've got 300 auditions for voiceovers on your computer and you've booked two. Wow, that's a good percentage. Do you know how many auditions you go out for and you don't book? Your hair looks like shit today. You know, all of these things. But we have that in our own internal monologue where, you know, I'll get a text from Andy and mm-hmm. I don't know. There's no subtext in a text. It's just, yeah, sure, whatever, and okay, we'll do this. Well, if I'm in the wrong mindset, I hear, yeah, whatever, okay, fine, we'll just do this. When I stop and say, okay, stop thinking about that and remember who Andy is, remember how he talks when I see him, and look at this text again, and it's like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever, oh, and we'll do this. And your frame of mind dictates how you interpret information. And then you have to take the time to tell that little voice, okay, maybe you're wrong. I need to look at this another way. And for me, that realization, I haven't mastered it.
Mm-hmm.
But at least I now know that when I start going down that dark path with whatever it is, a conversation with a partner or your family or friends or whatever, that you're taking this weird perspective on, maybe you should also stop and see if there's another perspective
mm-hmm.
that it could be. That's not quite so hard a stretch to get to this one that you're feeling right now.
Right.
The simplest answer is usually the correct one. And I mean, that's hard to do. But for me, that was a big realization in myself that, mm-hmm. hey, I'm fostering this thing because I'm fostering this thing. Maybe I need to look at it another way. And so for me, that that was a huge realization. I'm not perfect at it yet, but at least I can recognize things, and I'm getting faster at that internal monologue turnaround and looking at things. So currently that's my story.
Dennis Nickel writes, in light of the recent full moon, not recent anymore. In light of the recent full moon and Jupiter being clearly visible in the Puget Sound area lately, what is your guys' favorite astrological event, phenomenon, view, etc.? Man, that the fucking eclipse was just fantastic. Just fantastic.
I'm sure it was. I was in Vegas. It was cloudy. All the fucking places to be cloudy.
It did something that not a lot can do, and it united an entire nation.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they were in the direct path of the full eclipse, it united everybody. It was weird. It was weird, you know? So yeah, that's definitely my favorite.
Mine, very easily, is Cassiopeia.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that because National Geographic gave me a glow-in-the-dark star chart that I had on my ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And as a grade schooler or primary schooler, I had to write a Christmas story.
Mm-hmm.
And Cassiopeia, which is just a very simple W in the sky, struck me. And I wrote this whole Christmas story revolving around Cassiopeia.
Nice.
Or Cassiopeia, depending upon how you want to pronounce it. Uranus, Uranus, your choice. When it's not the most spectacular thing that I've ever seen. I mean, being on a raft in the middle of a lake at the base of Mount Rainier at Camp Pioneer, looking up at the night sky and being able to count multiple dozens of satellites crossing back and forth. Mm-hmm. Because it is so crystal clear, that's an amazing event. But whenever someone says anything about celestial bodies, the first thing that snaps in my head is Cassiopeia.
Nice. Nice. Well, that about wraps it up for this one.
Yes.
Join us again for 214 in a couple of months. Hopefully sooner than that.
Sooner than that.
But yeah, we couldn't do this without the help of our Patreon backers. So thank you so much. Hawk Robinson.
James Peters,
Leslie Sedlak,
Rob McLennan,
Zombie Orpheus Entertainment,
Dennis Nickel,
Aaron Weathers. No, for real.
Casey Lee,
Jay Blanken,
Todd McKimmy,
Dougie Sharp,
Bo Pritchard,
Tom Brophy,
Gordon Duke,
Lotta Jer,
Tim Martin,
Laura Adams,
James Herbert,
Brad Roberts,
Jennifer Reifenberry, or Tobin Dax this week.
Rival guy. I wasn't saying it on purpose because of the thing that happened.
I know.
Oh.
But it'll be Aaron from now on.
No, she probably canceled it.
Oh, that would be too bad.
We're broke.